When we go and talk to clients, no one's talking about a COVID-19 response plan. Best companies are actually talking about business recovery, and the really progressive companies are actually talking about winning in 2021 and beyond.
That's Vinay Kudo, PwC's Fit for Growth leader. I'm Heather Horn, and Vinay's joining me for the next episode in our new summer podcast series, What's Next? A series that explores the question on all of our minds. How do we emerge from the current crisis stronger than before? Vinay is going to talk to us about business recovery with a focus on 5 points for responding to the uncertainty in today's environment. So settle in for a great episode. So Vinay, thank you so much for joining me today. Looking forward to understanding what you're talking about when you're meeting with companies to discuss business recovery. And specifically, as we think about where we are in July 2020, where it's there a lot of uncertainty about where we're going, what are some of the top things that people have on their minds?
When we talk to CEOs, if you kind of think about what's foremost on their mind as they kind of think about preparing for 2021, so I'm now thinking about recovery and winning in the new normal, we see their agenda really focused on 5 things. First, they are abandoning their strategies. Some of the best companies are actually throwing away their strategic plans and saying, let's start anew, because the rules of the game have changed. The second is there's an intense focus on revenue recovery. What a lot of companies ask me is, hey, what should we do to actually grow our business and climb out of the hole that we have in our revenue plan? And that discussion happens before the third topic that I was actually going to talk about, which is reshaping the cost agenda. So strategy, revenue recovery, and costs in that order. And then after that, it moves into the conversation around how do we get our organization, right, to come with us on this new journey that we're embarking on. And then once we are in the new world, right, what do we need to do to retool ourselves to actually win and outsmart and outcompete our competition, which may be very different. The competitors we have in the new world may be very different from what we have in the here and now. How do we retool to actually win that game?
That's a great start, Vinay. I have so many questions for you now. I especially like, though, the reference to winning. So we're definitely going to come back to that. But before that, I think what's important is, you know, you talked a little bit about the fact we're in July, and I know I'm in LA, the newspaper is pretty grim, you know, and I think a lot of companies, there is a lot of uncertainty. So I like the fact that what you're focused on with these companies is 2021. And it's kind of, okay, we know we have to get through the next 6 months, but then really let's hit the ground running in 2021. It sounds like it's sort of the underlying theme, and then we can go into each of these areas.
That is exactly right. The emerging stronger theme is coming out loud and clear. As companies are, when we go and talk to clients, no one's talking about a COVID-19 response plan, okay? The best companies are actually talking about business recovery, and the really progressive companies are actually talking about the next horizon, winning in 2021 and beyond, and what seeds do we need to sow now for that to pan out in 2021 and beyond, because the best companies recognize that they need to actually retool themselves, strengthen capabilities, and build new muscle that they never had before in order to kind of prepare for a very different future.
Okay, so then with that context, maybe we can take each of your points in order. We can end with winning, which is a nice place. But let's start with revisiting strategies. So if I'm thinking about my strategy and, you know, again, we said, okay, the end of 2020, people are going to kind of have to get through. But as I look to 2021, how are companies thinking about strategy, or what do you recommend to them in terms of what they should be focused on?
So the conversation on strategy is incomplete, Heather, without a conversation on planning for demand scenarios. How do we think demand's going to shape up? And that's always driven by macro level planning, right? Looking at the world at large and taking a bet on how we think the pandemic is going to evolve in different parts of the world. Then from that macro level planning, you go down to what's called sector level planning, which is in my industry, given where how the world is going to be shaping up, how is that going to be impacted? How is customer behavior going to shift? How is buyer behavior going to shift? What's going to happen to some of my strongest competitors? What's going to happen to some of the competitors that I'm winning against today? How are business boundaries going to be redrawn and reconfigured, you know, in the new normal? And then the third level of planning actually occurs around the company itself, which is now that I can have a view on, at a macro level, how COVID is going to impact the world economy, at a sector level, on what's going to happen in the industry. I'm then going to focus on what's happening to my customers and to my suppliers, and particularly with my customers, the value that I have, the positioning that I have with my customers to differentiate in terms of what I do versus the competition. Will that resonate in a post-COVID-19 world? What are some of the things that we as an organization need to do better than anyone else in order to meet those new value propositions better? Are our sources of competitive advantage going to be the same, or are they going to be very different? And then finally, if they are going to be different, what kind of investment am I going to need to actually create that level of differentiation? And those are very real topics that are occurring in the world of strategy. And to make this real, let me give you two examples. One is engineering company with engineering centers that actually drive a lot of innovation around the world. And the question that they're asking is, hey, I built my innovation centers, my R&D centers, based on the fact that I needed to have labs and I needed to have people that sit in those labs. And I need to figure out where I can get the best talent to actually source my R&D from in those locations. And let me go and build labs there. But COVID-19 has completely turned the world of the way we work upside down. And so what companies are now thinking about is, if I can work virtually, and if what COVID-19 has demonstrated is that I can actually work anywhere in the world and still get probably 80% of what I had to get done, I do not need to be in a lab 24/7. I probably need to be in a lab once a month. The second example is, in any B2B or B2C, but specifically B2C business that's directly serving consumers, right? And what COVID has actually taught us is that buyer behavior is going to be shifting dramatically from in-store, on-premise to digital. And as a company evaluates its strategy, what it needs to think about is, if my buyer behavior is going to be shifting because consumers are not going to be visiting stores anymore, how do I actually make sure I deliver a unique shopping experience for them online? How do I price competitively online and make sure that every day my pricing is dynamic? Because as customers go online, they're going to be doing comparison shopping. You may think that this is very straightforward, but particularly small and mid-sized businesses that don't rely on online, and as a result of which now I have to build that capability.
But one question I have for you, because you're talking about this shift and the shift maybe in how things are being delivered. But one of the other things we've seen from a strategy perspective in the past, you know, let's say 3 or 4 months, is companies actually just changing what they're delivering. So, you know, those examples of someone who was making alcohol and now making hand sanitizer, or someone who's making clothing is making masks or PPE or whatever. And how does that type of change in strategy fit in then with what you're talking about?
Great point. And that is exactly one of the elements that your strategy needs to pick up on. And also kind of touches on the second point that I raised earlier about revenue recovery, right? So if I answer your question in that context, which was the most important thing that companies need to plan for in revenue recovery, is having a laser-like focus on making sure that they are doing everything possible to convert opportunities and deals into actual sales, but also start looking very carefully at new demand that's emerging, and how can I serve new demand that fits with what I do and what I'm great at. So I have the intrinsics, I have the technology, I have the R&D prowess, I have the distribution muscle. And the new demand, whether it's hand sanitizers or masks or ventilators, right? Can I actually branch out into adjacencies and capture white space that is being created by the pandemic? But the first order of business is revenue recovery. And as I said earlier, a lot of the conversations that we have with leaders is really around, look, what can I actually do to make sure that I try and capture as much of my revenue as I possibly can, given where demand's going to land? So one is you need to have fundamental understanding of how much of a free fall in demand that your business is going to be experiencing, because you need to have realistic expectations on what the yield rate on that demand is likely going to be. So if you're in the airline industry or in the hotel industry or in the travel and tourism industry, you need to have that very realistic point of view, because you know it's a cliff and it's going to be very significant. But in other industries, you know, automotive, retail, healthcare, tech, right? Those industries are not experiencing such a massive drop in demand. And so all the more reason for them to say, what's our realistic view of what the demand is likely going to be, and then how best do we capture it? And what we see companies doing is very tactical things, like creating war rooms, where you look at the pipeline and say, if these are my deals in the pipeline, or these are the opportunities I have in my pipeline, how do I actually convert those? Or going account by account and looking at some of the most important accounts that are being served and saying, can we focus on the big accounts that are going to land us 60 to 70% of our revenue and focus less on the tail and direct our sales force to actually go significantly after those big accounts and land the big deals as opposed to distracting them from going too broad, right? And therefore not closing on deals. Pricing is another area that companies are looking at. How much do we discount, right? Recognizing that we do need to basically take a margin hit in order to generate revenue. So how would that work? And so these are some of the tactical things that, you know, companies are doing. The other is marketing. Let me look at the demand that has to be generated through campaigns, through advertising, through promotions. How do I get the most bang for the buck, right? How do I take what is going to be a very constrained set of discretionary marketing dollars and advertising dollars and use them in the most judicious way in the target segments that where demand is growing? So that's very much kind of focused on short-term revenue recovery. The longer term, the white space and figuring out, are there new sources of demand that I can actually go after because my value chain is set up to do that, is, I would say, one of the things that some of the more progressive companies are actually kind of thinking about long and hard.
So Vinay, one of the things I was thinking about when we were talking about strategy, and even more so here with revenue, is I'm trying to stand in the shoes of the CFO. They're trying to predict the future. And obviously, none of us have a crystal ball. And even what we thought a month ago is probably going to be different than a month from now. So in these areas, and it probably equally applies to the ones we're going to talk about, what do you tell people who are struggling with uncertainty, how to deal with all of the uncertainty we're all seeing right now?
I wish I had the right answer to your question, but honest to goodness, the best advice I can give is work in a very agile way. Today's plan is going to be as good as a plan that you're going to have to generate in 3 weeks. It's going to be the shelf life of a strategic plan is probably going to be no more than a quarter at best, or 3 weeks at worst. The best way of actually deciding on how to respond to uncertainty is to be agile and nimble and have the dexterity of a startup, which means your organization can turn on a dime and respond immediately to changes in the environment. So commit to a plan, work in an agile way, revisit assumptions probably every month, use every piece of information you can get your data from, right? And be ready to pivot, and in some cases, be ready to do a complete U-turn and respond in a very agile way, which is extremely hard for very large, very global companies to do. And it's even harder when you are operating in 150 to 200 countries around the world. So make sure that you have the channels of information flowing to you from the market to headquarters are as uncluttered as possible. And you can't rely on the traditional chain of command where you have to go through 8 layers of the organization to actually get to someone who can actually make a decision. And that's what it means to operate like a startup, right? Startups operate in a chaotic environment, but information flows very quickly and teams get assembled and reassembled to solve problems. So the way to actually deal with uncertainty is to have that startup mentality where you assimilate information, you assemble and reassemble SWAT teams to go after and solve issues, whether they could be near-term operational issues or longer-term strategic issues. But you bring that SWAT team mentality to strategy in much the same way as you do to executing a fire drill.
So it's interesting because we talked at the beginning about looking ahead to 2021, but you weren't saying wait until 2021. What you were saying is work now, be ready to keep pivoting, and then hopefully when you get to that point, you're going to start to see the benefit of some of the strategy and other changes that you're making right now.
Exactly. Start planning now, but be ready to think of, in some cases, refinements to your plan, in some cases, major overhauls to your plan, and in some cases, major abandonments, right, to your plan, kind of based on how the scenario that you plan for actually sort of materializes. But the most important thing is don't let the uncertainty stop you from planning. Because I often talk to a couple of my clients who say, hey, why bother, right? We're just going to have to basically, every day is a new day. Every day is a new adventure. So let's live by the day. And that is not what we would advise you to do. That will basically keep your head above water, barely. But if the recessions of 2008 and the dot-com bubble bust in 2001 have taught us anything, it is that downturns favor those that take risks, make bets, and actually use the downturn as an opportunity to actually build important muscle. So to give you an example, it's a hot talent market at the moment. You have graduates emerging from some of the top universities in the world, or they may be employees and individuals, very qualified individuals that are displaced as companies actually have to shrink and reduce their workforce. This is a great opportunity to actually get some extraordinarily good talent. So go after talent. This is a good opportunity to actually think about acquisitions, given where the stock market is, given where the earnings per share are of certain companies, right? Given where stock prices are. If you want to actually make a strategic acquisition, to your point, Heather, going earlier about white spaces and other things that we could do to move into adjacencies, and you are in an enviable position of being cash rich, good opportunity to make an acquisition. Those are the kind of bets that companies made 12 years ago in 2008 and almost 2 decades ago in the last recession, and they emerged coming out extremely strong. And while this recession is like no other, we would still think that some of those lessons learned from previous recessions ought to be rinse and repeated over here to actually emerge stronger.
So then, Vinay, if I'm listening to this and I'm thinking that's something for the whole organization to deal with, but I'm controller or the CFO or someone in the finance function, what's the role in the finance function in dealing with some of these types of issues, the broader strategy for the company, making sure we're agile and nimble, et cetera?
The finance function typically has a really critical role to play in the company, even in normal circumstances, right? Because CFOs and the finance functions progress so much further than just being accountants or putting the brakes on investments and saying we should do this and we shouldn't do those, right? They become architects of the strategic agenda of a company and very often transformation agents. And nowhere is that role more important than in the current crisis where we have, where the finance community and the CFO in general needs to actually be laser-like focused on business recovery. So what I tell our CFO clients is, look, the first thing you got to do is take care of your own shop, right? And make sure that you're focused on the health and well-being of your talent, and that you are also making sure that you're planning for talent management in the finance organization, and how do I create the finance model of the future? The second thing we tell our CFO clients is, look, for the piece that I talked about earlier, the scenario modeling and the forecasting, that is where the CFOs can actually play a really important role in taking the demand forecast coming out of the scenario modeling and saying, what does this do for our revenue, our cash flow, our capital utilization, and our P&L, right? So converting the demand forecast into a model for what the P&L expectations are for the company that I can then use to guide the street or give me indications of where I'm going to be landing in terms of my overall earnings performance. That modeling and that muscle is incredibly important for a CFO to actually own and actually start building, because like I talked about before, no model is going to last more than 3 or 4 weeks or even 2 or 3 months as assumptions change. The third thing I would say is this kind of back to the recovery versus the emerging stronger. On the recovery front, the basics that the CFO needs to do around making sure that you're minimizing the burn rate in OPEX, that you're bolstering liquidity, that you're managing cash, that you're looking at your receivables and your payables and looking at the health of your customers and the health of your suppliers and looking at your working capital. Liquidity management is cash is king. And we often take that as for granted, right, in terms of what a finance function should do. But I don't want to miss out on that piece because that's vitally important. And then the final thing I would say is, as the custodian of costs in the company, what the CFO needs to do is navigate that tightrope on how much should I right-size my cost structure to meet the demands of today versus thinking ahead and saying, look, I don't want to sort of cut into too much muscle now and then regret it later. So figuring out what the optimum cost structure ought to be, how much I should right-size, and how much muscle I leave behind because I want to have that investment for my emerging stronger agenda. And that balance around, do I cut costs? How much muscle do I cut into? Is something that a CFO needs to be very artful in doing. Now, in some instances, you have no option but to go and make some very severe cost cuts because that's a survival issue. But assuming you've kind of climbed out of that trough and are easing your way back to health, the question now is going to be around, when do I open the door and start rehiring, right? And where do I rehire? And what parts of the business do I start rebuilding? Having the CFO weigh in as the objective, neutral person sitting at the shoulder of the CEO and being the trusted advisor, I think is one of the highest and best uses of the CFO.
Yeah, it's interesting listening to what you're talking about. We started talking about agility for the whole organization, but really seems like for the finance function, agility is going to be particularly important because if you talk about budgets, well, you don't have a year or 6 months or whatever your normal budget cycle is to be doing budgets. And, you know, if the CEO is asking for information, you don't want to say, oh, well, let my, you know, my team's going to take a month to crunch these numbers for you. If the company is trying to change strategy that quickly, the finance organization needs to be able to feed into that and, to your point, be that sort of trusted voice or advisor.
Exactly. And one additional foundational point, Heather, but again, I don't want to take for granted, is risk management. As layoffs occur, companies could be highly vulnerable to failures in internal control. So the need for internal controls and fraud management is incredibly important. I mentioned cash management, right, as being important, but the CFO should also be looking at what disruption I could have in my supply base because my suppliers go under, right? Or what disruption I could have in my revenue base because my customers go under. So looking at risk management from a cash perspective is also important. And then the third piece is cyber. As we companies virtualize and as the finance function virtualizes, you're creating more vulnerability in your control infrastructure and your systems infrastructure. Another really important role that the CFO plays is to make sure that those risks you know, have a more robust plan to respond, you know, with speed in case of a cyber attack.
I want to ask you, with all of these moving parts, where I should start. But before I do that, we still have a few more moving parts to cover, which the next one, I think, was how I bring my employees along. So now I'm, let's say, a CFO or a controller. I'm trying to support the organization. I have to do everything faster, more nimble, better. And then maybe I have people who are dealing with their own situations at home and don't feel prepared to handle all these types of situations. How do you advise your clients in that situation?
I don't have a pat answer again, but I can just reflect on the conversations I've had with my CFO clients, Heather, and to a person, they have all said how inspired and energized they have been around how their organization rallied and responded to the crisis. Acts of putting company first and self next, incredible sacrifices, incredibly long hours, and most importantly, innovative ways of really putting aside the kinds of things that used to keep companies from collaborating effectively and coming together virtually to make decisions and get things done. And so what I've been telling clients is, look, if a crisis was able to bring people together in such an innovative and novel way and a unique way, what can we do to make sure that that becomes permanent? How do we actually get the team to rally for the next 2 to 3 years?
Right.
You know, and make it part of the way in which we actually do business. And I would say we at PwC, we have a very learned consultant, Mr. Katzenbach, who's kind of written about culture change. And he often says the culture change that sticks is not when you import another company's culture into yours. It's when you take what he calls the critical few, those critical few behaviors that are alive and well in parts of your company, and scale it up. Because if it exists in your company, it's in the DNA of the company. And then the trick is to see whether it can be adopted across the entire company. And so I would say the way you bring your people along is to look at those two or three or handful of critical behaviors that were so essential in the response phase of the pandemic when we were all in lockdown mode, and say, let's take a couple of those and figure out how to basically make them part of the DNA and the culture of the company going forward. And it could be simple things like give folks more autonomy to problem solve. When people come back to you with a plan, don't expect it to be 100% perfect. Go with 70%, because 70% is good enough. Show empathy, express gratitude. Those go a long way. A lot of that happened while we were in the throes of the pandemic, and those should kind of continue. Make decisions fast. Empower people to make decisions and say, you live by the decision you make. You're accountable for it, right? And go and take some risks. And that has been working extraordinarily well. And most importantly, I would say the companies that do this well, beyond having the cultural change nailed and making those behaviors stick, also are painting a picture to the employees of what the future looks like. So this goes back to the strategy. You've got to give people hope, but you also need to be authentic and transparent and let folks know that before we get out of the tunnel, we may sort of, you know, hit our head on some rocks along the way. And when companies do that in any transformation, not just one that's associated with the pandemic, they win a lot of hearts and minds, and they win the respect and the loyalty of the frontline. And so the way you bring people along is to make it more than just the dollars and cents. It is, we can actually go back to being the company that you were proud of in the past by doing these kinds of things to assure our future. And by invoking what we're calling the emotional core of why your employees come to work every day and come and work for you, and drawing on that emotional connection that they have with the company, you can basically move a lot of hearts and minds. So that, I think, would be so essential to actually bring people along into the new ways of operating.
So then, Vinay, if I go to your last item, which was how to win, what else would you tell a company in terms of how to win in the future?
To win, I need to make some bets, right? And the bets could be, you know, an acquisition. It could be acquiring significant talent, it could be acquiring a company. But I think to win, if anything, if you do not have a significant digital agenda, and if digitization is not part of the fabric of your company, you're probably going to be left by the wayside. So in order to win, you need to basically digitize dramatically, both to basically achieve productivity and also to basically deliver a unique customer experience for your customers that are going to be engaging with you online. I'll bring it to PwC. We have to learn in this new environment on how to basically engage with our clients and build relationships remotely. We need to actually learn how to make that 1 hour we have with that client even more memorable through a digital experience, because we're not going to get their attention otherwise. And so that's what I mean by retooling and making some big bets for the future. It's not just the technology. It's how the technology is put to use by the people that are using it to kind of create a new experience, and upskilling all of us from the front line to the corporate office to be operating in a digital world where we have to deliver experiences that are as intimate and as differentiating as in-person meetings in a very unique way, and work in a very different way, right? Digital means that I'm working to get things done end-to-end, agile, in sprints, and be ready to sort of work with a minimum viable product, launch, learn, update. All of that is part of the retooling that's needed. And in the past, clients could say, well, I'm doing some digital stuff. Yeah, I'm experimenting here or there. I don't think it's optional anymore. You know, it has become a prerequisite for survival and for success. And that is, I think, the biggest retooling component in the client's agenda that I would recommend.
So Vinay, you've definitely given us so many different things to think about. And if I'm listening and feeling like I can't get it all done at once, where would you recommend that they start?
I would say, look, there are a few key steps that I would recommend clients kind of starting with. The first is be clear on what emerging stronger means for your business. And that is kind of going back to the scenario planning I talked about earlier, using judgment, using experience, using the data to plan out different scenarios, plan out the probabilities of scenarios materializing, and saying in that context, best case, worst case, most likely case, what does recovery mean for business? If you don't start there, it's going to be very difficult for you to plan out an agenda, because you need a plan. And that plan has got to be based on a set of assumptions. And those assumptions have to be based on what you truly believe is going to materialize. So being clear on the what emerging stronger means for your business based on a scenario plan that you and the leadership team believe is most achievable and also most realizable for you as a company is really critical. The second thing I would say is ask yourself repeatedly, what have I learned from this crisis in terms of things that I do differently now that I never did before? And that introspection is really important, because I tell you, when I talk to clients and I run focus groups with clients on this front, it's like you could fill 10 virtual whiteboards with the responses you get. Companies have learned so much about how to interact with customers, how to work with each other, how to manage work-life balance, how to motivate employees, how to execute certain processes. And I think capturing those learnings and saying, how do I make some of these ways of working permanent are really important. But what have I learned in terms of what I do differently? And making that something that the organization rallies around, because it could be a hugely unifying moment for the company to come together and say, look at all the wonderful things we did. Right, or the innovative things we did that we've never dreamt of before. And if we can continue to work in this way, crisis notwithstanding, right, or even in the absence of a crisis, we'd be a great company. That is important. But capturing that, even down to the micro level around what does a storefront clerk do differently now to, you know, what does a CFO do differently now, I think would be, you know, the next step that I would recommend. And then the final step, I would say, is the alignment of the organization to wherever you're going to go, right? The hearts and minds piece is incredibly important. We've spoken a lot about strategy and reshaping costs and going after customers and digitizing and ways of working. But now more than ever, if you don't align your organization to the plan and also look at your organization and say, how do I actually move in the direction of the skills that I need? How much of that can I do by training and upskilling folks that I have in my organization? How much of that's going to have to come from importing and hiring from the outside? How much of it is going to come from, you know, buying a new company that has that kind of skill set? So the organization capabilities and the alignment of the organization to the plan is, I would say, the third and most critical, you know, next step.
Well, Vinay, it's definitely a daunting list that you just outlined, but also I think one that energizing and almost gives a sense of optimism that this is an opportunity and not just, you know, I think a lot of times we just think about the negative of what's going on, but it really is a big opportunity. So just really appreciate all the insight and definitely looking forward to potentially continuing this conversation on another podcast because I've got a lot more questions for you. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you to Vinay for joining me today, and thank you for tuning in. Interested in learning more about the topics Vinay discussed? Stay tuned for more episodes in the What's Next series as we delve deeper into topics like strategy, digital transformation, culture, and of course, the return to the office. For all your other accounting and reporting questions, check out our Tuesday podcast series, where each week we help you tackle your accounting issues. So that you never miss an episode of any of our audio content, subscribe to the PwC Accounting Podcast Series wherever you listen to your podcasts. And to stay up to date on the latest content, let's connect on LinkedIn. For PwC, I'm Heather Horn. Thanks for tuning in.
This podcast is brought to you by PwC, all rights reserved. PwC refers to the U.S. member firm or one of its subsidiaries or affiliates, and may sometimes refer to the PwC network. Each member firm is a separate legal entity. Please see www.pwc.com/structure for further details. This podcast is for general information purposes only and should not be used as a substitute for consultation with professional advisors.